Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing well, but I could be a little bit better if the weather was better.
Yes.
We need a new studio. We do our best with what we have, but when it rains, it can get a little noisy. But we are going to proceed. But you know, there's a lot in the news today. It's too bad we don't have open mic or something because, you know, the stock market is really reeling right now. It was up, it was down over 500 this morning, and gold had been up 15 $16, and of course these are the kind of things that I have anticipated. But also, you know, the situation in Saudi Arabia is still a big problem, and now they're trying to drag Iran into this little squabble that's going on. At the same time, we're challenged by our studio and our noise on our ceiling. But anyway, what we want to talk about today, because it really is in the news, and we haven't talked too much about it, because there's no simple answer.
Yeah.
It's one of these problems that is a lot easier preventing it. It's sort of like asking the doctor, how do you treat this and this and this? Well, it would have been better if you never smoked.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we have a problem. It's in the news, and it's a big deal. And it may be more political than anything else. And that's, you know, a couple people coming up through Mexico from Honduras and Guatemala. A couple of people, like 14,000, and it may be much bigger, and it's getting a lot of people's attention, and it is a challenge for, you know, libertarians to come out on a position, because basically, I would think most libertarians say, well, you should have as much free travel as possible, and there were times when we had freer trade right now, than freer travel than we have right now, but, you know, in a way, a world could be, you know, when you talk about travel and trade, it'd be more idealistic, like if you could visualize the United States as 50 countries.
Yeah.
You say, well, you've worked it out pretty well. We don't like one state, we go back and forth, and that could be a goal, but it isn't quite that simple, because people identify culturally in different ways with countries. But right now, we have this this crisis, and it's be much easier to prevent it, because I think it's the lack of a libertarian society that makes this thing difficult, because most of the problems could be solved with a private property position. In a think about a group of people who lived on an island. They were all libertarians. Well, nobody came on the island unless they got permission.
Yeah.
You know, it would never be an agreement. But when it's a collective, and when it's socialized, and when it's a welfare, and why, and when we get involved in wars overseas, and when we get involved in monkeying around with the politics and the economies of Central America, we've been involved in that for a long time. It makes it much more complex, but we still have the problem that we can face, that people aren't going to change. Sometimes I think it's sort of like, how do you solve the problem of perfect civil liberties for a government school?
Yeah.
Well, there is no such thing. Once the government turns it over, they dictate, you know, dress codes and the books you read and what holidays you have and how do you protect every single person who has certain beliefs. It's not possible. So the problem is the government ownership. And a lot of the problem we have can be defined that way. But still, somewhere along in this program, we'll have to at least make a suggestion of what do you do? Yeah, that's true, but you still have to do something. So what are you going to do? Are you going to resort to a military with guns or just what? So that's why I have you with me today, Daniel, to help solve this problem, because I consider it a problem, even if it could have been you know, prevented. It's a big political part problem. And I think right now the only thing on the people's mind is it going to hurt the Democrats more than the Republicans? And that's why it's probably a very big issue, because quite frankly, you know, the number of people, it's a disturbance, but it shouldn't bring the United States to its knees. You know, I don't think that is the case. But it's an interesting subject to discuss, and hopefully we can give some productive solutions to it.
You started with such a great analogy, the medical analogy, because, and that also will leave people very unsatisfied, because we have gotten a lot of comments. People want us to talk about this on the show, and I'm sure they want you to come down with an answer. Here's what we do. But you're right. It would have been better if you didn't smoke. You know, now we've got to deal with your lung cancer or emphysema, you know, and that makes it a complex problem. And, you know, I did immigration for you back when you were in the House, and it was one of the toughest things ever. But you know, here are some of the facts. If we can believe what we see and what we're told, which I'm still skeptical in some ways, but thousands of migrants, including many migrant families, women and children, some of them marching as far up from Honduras through Guatemala and up through Mexico. It's either 1,100 miles to the closest border with Texas or about 2,400 miles to the California border. They're going to walk nonstop from 15 to 30 days till they get to these borders. And frankly, it's a little hard to believe that you're going to be taking little kids in a stroller and you're going to walk 2,400 miles. Something doesn't seem right. We've seen the dramatic pictures of these long lines of people, but we've also seen pictures of flatbed trucks with people on them. So what's the full story? We don't know, but something doesn't seem right in the way it's being told.
No, it doesn't look like the typical line of migration in war zones. You know, when people are marching and you know they are destitute and they're having trouble and the clothes are not too good. A lot of these people are decently dressed and they have a little knapsack. But then the question is, what about, how do they manage that? Somebody has to help them. I mean, they have to have food, water, and facilities all along the way. And so I have trouble believing that this is spontaneous. This didn't all of a sudden, for a few disgruntled people, especially young males who are single, which is a large number, all of a sudden saying, oh, yeah, let's go to America. They'll welcome us in. And at the same time, they're carrying flags that are antagonistic to America. But then the question is, if there's financing, I happen to believe there has to be financing, there has to be organization. I happen to believe that they represent a group of people more that support cultural Marxism, and they would like to disrupt this country, and they are pushing it. And somebody like Soros is quite capable of doing something like this. But it's just a little bit strange for anybody to believe, oh, yeah, this is typical. We knew they were unhappy and disgruntled, and all of a sudden this was the time to move. I'm sure plenty of them are there, and I've met some people who have come desperately to come, and I know exactly how I'd feel if I was under those circumstances. Yeah. But that doesn't mean people wouldn't take advantage of the plight of these people and say, we can stir up a lot of trouble and we can move our agenda in a different direction because we're looking for a one-world utopia, and that is very good for everybody.
And it sounds almost conspiratorial, but we've seen a pattern of doing this from Ukraine to Syria, where there was a legitimate beef that people had, and it was ramped up by outside forces and turned into a revolution. Who knows if that's something to play here? When we talked about it before the show, we were thinking about the logistics of, say, it's 14,000 people all marching together, more or less, in a group. How do they stop and eat? You know, was it McDonald's on the road? I mean, going to the bathroom, things of that nature. I mean, I'm reminded of the biblical story of Jesus with the five loaves and five fishes. But I don't know that that's going to work here. I don't know that that's going to be at play. So how do so many people eat?
You know, and I don't think anybody can anticipate that because some people are claiming that the Antichrist is nearby. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about the different people, and, of course, there's exaggerations. And we're so far concentrating on people who are organized to promote a political agenda. But there are others involved that makes this more likely. I think the welfare state and the support of the welfare state, both here in this country and in Central America, is part of it. I just sort of... I'm bewildered when they say, okay, they're doing this and you're not listening to us, so we're not going to give you your allowance this week. Yeah. We're going to take away those millions of dollars of foreign aid because you didn't do enough to keep them out, which means, why are we giving them foreign aid anyway? You know, but it just seems to be so far removed. But of course, then the question comes up about youth gangs. There's youth gangs like MS-13. I'm sure there's some people there, but they're already here. But there's the drug element too. I think that if you dealt with the welfare state and also repealed the drug war, which means that you would treat what people put into their bodies like you treat people for what they put into their minds. And what I'm referring to is, we don't ban books because of the horrible philosophies, or we don't ban religion that teaches horrible things of violence. No, We don't. We sort that out some other way. But when it comes to drugs and food and everything else, the government has to have micromanaging. And the drug war precipitates a lot of problems. I would think the drug lords right now see this. It might be an advantage. I wonder if they can get in the middle of 14,000 people and slip into the country and make some deals.
And certainly the drug war destabilizes the societies where they come from, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico. But we're talking about what might be some of the causes of this, and people may not be satisfied because we have to go back a few years. It's not something that happened last week. We don't actually have to go back too far when it comes to Honduras, though, because if you remember, in 2009, Hillary Clinton's State Department launched a coup against the government of Honduras, essentially, overthrew the government of Manuel Zelaya, who they felt was not sufficiently pro-Washington. And any time you have a coup, even if they had the best of intentions, what it does is it destabilizes the society, as we see in Ukraine and elsewhere. Destabilized. So since 2009, I've just looked up some statistics. The poverty level has risen from 58.8 up all the way to 66.5% of the population. It also unleashed an unbelievable wave of violence when you have this kind of society being torn apart. In 2012, 86 homicides per 100,000 people. 86. In the U.S., it's 4.9 per 100,000. So you're talking about an enormous increase in murder, in poverty, all at least indirectly related to the U.S. destabilization through the coup. Guatemala is another story we've talked about before since 1954, and when the CIA engineered a coup there to turn it into a little private company for the U.S., they've always been destabilized in the 80s with the U.S. support for military dictatorships, etc., and plus the spillover effect from Honduras into Guatemala of just this. So U.S. interventionism, I hate to beat this horse, but it certainly you cannot ignore it.
And like we said earlier, that we can't assume that we can start where we'd like to have people own property, then make most of the decision on who walks across their land. But we could try to get people to think in those terms, because when people come and they have into a country like ours, which has a strong collectivist philosophy, that there's an obligation to redistribute wealth and take care of people in need. And if you don't do that, you're an immoral, evil person. So, but it's legal plunder is what it really is, that they have rights. And some people coming in these groups, they're saying, I've come up here to get free medical care and sort of thing. Some come, and I believe a lot come, just to work hard, and I appreciate that. But they will come. But the big problem is how can we make this point stronger? Well, how many of these people end up in fancy condominiums or on the land of a fancy condominium? How many people in this group will end up in the in a guarded community, a gated community? None. if you want to play antagonist, say, all right, we're going to say that a certain percentage of people that come in, even in California.
Yeah.
We're going to send this number of people to your gated community, and you're going to absorb them. But who absorbs these problems? You know, the public hospitals, and there'll be rents that'll be changed, and it'll be middle class and poor people who are going to suffer the most.
Yeah.
And yet, the Democrats are saying that the people who don't say come with open arms, that you're against poor people.
Yeah.
But I think these policies and the system that we have has made poor people worse. And we've talked about monetary policy, how it wipes out the middle class, and on and on. But I think that the big question now that we might try to talk about is, it's a mess. We know that. We know that it could have been done better. There's been better systems around. And we do have welfare, and we have military intervention, which isn't going to go away easily. So what can we suggest? If the president calls us after our program, what should our suggestion be to him on what you could do? Now, he's made one suggestion, and he says he's going to send the military. Believe me, I think a lot of people are going to support that.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
They see it because it's both sides, use it for political reasons. And, at times when I look at that, I said, should he do something like that, and how would he do it? But I'm opposed to that. I remember Kent State, and mm-hmm. I remember Vietnam War, and that was military curtailing people who were demonstrating against an evil war, and kids got killed over that. So you don't, you have to do everything you can to prevent. If they were marching up here with rifles and things, and they were going to take over, that's a different story. This is not a military confrontation. This is social, and I think that that it should be dealt with border patrol. You know, civilian types. We've had border patrols before. We don't have the military on our border. We tried to prevent that. So I would be opposed to the use of the military. But how would the border patrol work? I don't know enough about the format of how to do it, but I'd put them in a line. You wait in line and we'll process you and find out what we can do for you. And we're going to check you out and have them stand in line and try to do it through the Border Patrol and a normal process, which is far from perfect. And I'm sure there'll be people say, oh no, Ron, you're giving up on the military too easily. But I just don't like, I don't like militarization around the world. I certainly don't like it right on our borders, especially when the problem we have created is partially ours with our welfareism and our foreign policy.
And a lot of people will be unsatisfied with you saying that because they have, this is the perfect example. This is an invasion. Excuse me, and that's why I use the word in the title, because it is a hot word, invasion. Is this an invasion? And I think you're right to point out that no, it really isn't an invasion as such. If it was an armed group coming through, of course, the military. But I don't know, maybe I like your idea of putting them in line. Maybe we should send the TSA down there.
Put them in charge.
Put them in charge. Nobody would come over the border. They'd rush back home.
They're going to rush back where it's freer.
Yeah. But, you know, we talk about politics, and I thought about, you know, who benefits? That's always a point, because whenever you see the media, the mainstream media, obsessing about something, you have to wonder who benefits. And I think in a weird way, both parties benefit from this. The people they need to stir up in both parties, the base benefits for both. For President Trump, this is red meat. This is exactly the kind of thing that got him elected. Foreigners are coming to invade. We've got to stop them. I already saw people putting up things about we need to put militias down there. Sign up, let's go down and protect the border. This is great for getting people motivated who might not come out to vote. Same is true for the Democrats. They want to show that Trump's a monster. He's not letting these people in. Look, this is just the racist Trump that we've been telling you all along. We got to get the base out. We got to get them out to vote. So in a strange way, Dr. Paul, I think both sides benefit. Who doesn't benefit the rest of us from this? But, well, keep an eye on it, Dr. Paul.
Right. And my guess is what will happen is a lot of these individuals are going to get into the country, which will be a burden to a lot of people because of the welfare system. You know, absorbing individuals who want to come and get away from a bad situation and willing to work and have sponsors, believe me, we could accept a lot of people. But under these circumstances where it's a burden to the welfare state, it's a lot different. It's not like private property and people invading on private property. It's similar, and the conditions are the same, but if they saw this in the issue of private property, there'd be a lot less of it happening. Like I mentioned, they're not going to go to the gated community or the fancy condominium, and that means they're going to protect some of the wealthier will protect themselves against the disadvantages of a lot of people marching in that may not be as friendly to us as we think they should be. I think it's a difficult problem. It's going to be around. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And neither Daniel or I will claim that we know it's going to help the Democrats or we know it's going to help the Republicans. But we'll have to wait and see. But the problem's going to be around even when these 14,000 are taken care of. It's going to be around because we have to change the basic policy of why we exist. And if it's to police the world and run the welfare state and violate the civil liberties of so many people here, we're going to continue to have these problems, and we're going to continue to have to deal with, you know, the blowback phenomenon. They never mention this about who might be in this caravan, but I think there's always the chance that somebody who's really unhappy with us, with our foreign policy, they could be coming in here as a terrorist and practicing blowback. So we need to reassess things. I think we should look to ourselves because we have little ability to change the governments of other worlds, but we don't need to finance things that we don't endorse and that we don't have control. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.